Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. This evening, we're going to be talking about the Billy Meier case. And I thought I would start out with an interview that Billy had in 2011, where he was asked the question, "What is love, really?" And Billy said, "You can quote from what I have written. Love is the absolute certainty that oneself co-lives and coexists in everything that exists, in fauna and flora, in the fellow human being, in each and every material and spiritual life form of any kind, and in the existence of the entire universe and beyond. Therefore, love is not just thoughts and feelings, but true love is a spiritual, fine, sensitive feeling and directly originates from the Gemut, i.e. from the spirit realm. And what are the human beings on earth usually doing? They build a form of thought and feeling related love through their thoughts and feelings, which is very often is not permanent. They marry, are together, and then after a few weeks, months, or years, everything falls apart. They divorce, get into quarrels, beat each other up. And under certain circumstances, there is even murder and manslaughter or whatever. A feeling-related love, love based on thoughts and feelings, is not what makes true love, which is of internally perceived origin, where things are transferred from the spirit realm into an internally perceived way, into the consciousness and the psyche. Well, we all have a spirit form, which is a tiny fragment you can consider, a tiny fragment of the universal consciousness. It resides in our superior colliculus, which is an area of our midbrain that controls sight. And the spirit form is no larger than the eye of a needle or the head of a pin, but it sends out radiating energy throughout the whole body in a lattice structure. And that spirit form enters the body of the child at 21 days of age, and it brings life into the body, the conscious life. When the spirit form comes in, it brings the consciousness with it. The consciousness, the subconsciousness, the unconsciousness. Buried in your subconscious are the wisdom of all your predecessor personalities, because most all of us here on the earth have lived many, many lifetimes. And death is just the passage to rebirth, rebirth in the world of pure spirit. And when I was reading what Billy had to say about love, it reminded me of another one of his writings, The Goblet of Truth, which has a beautiful passage, a beautiful paragraph that's entitled, "What the Truth Knows to Say." And it continues and says, "Rivers, stones, plants, animals, bushes, trees, rivers, everything that crawls and flies on the earth is a life form with a spirit form. And these spirit forms are on a journey through time, which involve many, many lifetimes. And that death is just the passage to rebirth, rebirth into the world of pure spirit. And many of these creatures are connected by psychic vibrations, and they're aware of each other. And if you go off into the forest, you can hear the crickets and the cicadas and the birds. You can hear the wind as it blows through the trees, because all of nature is an indissoluble web of life. And many of these creatures are connected by these psychic vibrations, and they're aware of each other. In fact, the incredible splendor of nature is the visible expression of the love of creation. The Meyer information explains that there is a universal consciousness. It's a spiritual energy, a superintelligence, and the way it expresses love is through the incredible splendor of its own creations. So the visible expression of the love of creation can be seen through nature. And love is the highest principle in nature. And everything follows that principle in absolute logic, because every tiny plant and every tiny animal fulfills its purpose in love. And we all have a purpose. We all have a purpose. And our meaning is to evolve our consciousness, to grow in wisdom. Because with each lifetime, we gain a little more wisdom. And we evolve our consciousness. And we go through up all these 7 evolutionary steps until we learn and finally merge back with creation. And to continue with this interview that Billy had in 2011, he was asked, is there a heaven? And Billy said, there is a heaven, a sky as we see it, not the ethereal heaven in that sense, if one talks about heaven. Human beings are usually seeing it from a religious angle, i.e. that somewhere an alleged dear God lives, or angels, etc. And this heaven does not exist. This is an illusion. This heaven is based on religions. Angels are also the product of religious assumption. And there are no angels in the way that the religions say. In ancient times, the angels were simply called messengers. But then the religions came, the faithful people. And these people called them angels. But an angel, translated into German and any other language, means no other than a messenger. And in ancient times, when certain extraterrestrials still came to the earth, they were called guardian messengers. Guardian and messenger at the same time. Guardian angels do not exist. This is also an invention by the religions and the sects. Each guardian angel that exists is the human being himself, through his thoughts, through his feelings, through his consciousness and his mental block, respectively. That's why he decides through his reason and understanding what he shall do in the correct way. And if certain things occur, then he thinks like lightning without noticing, when he still thinks unconsciously, when he triggers feelings unconsciously and makes everything right, then he protects himself. There is no such thing as an external guardian angel, as the religions and the sects claims. It does not exist. The human being is his own guardian angel. So the Meyer material talks about something called the Geist form, or the spirit form, which lives many, many millions of lifetimes. Again, it resides in the center portion of our brain called superior colliculus. And that spirit form lives all of these material lives in order to evolve. And when you die, the spirit form comes out of the body and it goes into the fine matter realm, the spiritual realm, which is a dimension adjacent to the physical dimension that we live in. And there's kind of an energy band around our planet where the spirit forms go after death, and all that information that you learned in that previous lifetime is taken with you in an energetic form, and it goes into a place called the overall consciousness block. Each spirit form creates one of these, and those past life experiences and memories are processed by the overall consciousness block, and they are turned into neutral evolutive energies like love and hope and peace and patience. And those values are stored in your spirit form. And the spirit form evolves during each lifetime, and it grows more powerful and grows in wisdom. And then on the spiritual side, the spirit form and the overall consciousness block work together to create the personality for the next lifetime. And the new personality is different than the previous personality. So each incarnation, each physical incarnation, you are a different person. But the spirit form is the same. So again, at the appropriate time, usually a lifetime and a half in the spirit realm we spend, except in times of overpopulation, we can spend a shorter time in the spiritual realm. But that spirit form is placed back into the body of a child at 21 days, and all the wisdom of those predecessor personalities come down and are stored in the subconscious. And that little embryo, that fetus, if you will, starts to think at 21 days old when that spirit form comes in. And some of the thoughts can be fairly profound. And that's when consciousness evolution starts at 21 days. Before that, the fetus is functioning much like a plant, an impulse-based evolution. Now, human beings are referred to categorically as Weisen in the German language. Now, other creatures that are also Weisen include the higher animals like dogs and cats and horses and monkeys and apes and whales and mammals. And all of these higher creatures like that, they have a personality. And they play a role through their free will in consciously determining their own evolution. Now the creation, the universal consciousness, although it's the highest intelligence in the universe, and that although it radiates love, and although the incredible splendor of nature is the visible expression of the love of creation, it really has no personality. It functions very automatically, and it's a super intelligence. It's a spiritual energy. It doesn't give us commands. It doesn't become angry. It's not vengeful. But in past times, we placed a label, we fixed a label on this universal consciousness, and we gave it the term God. And Billy was asked in this 2011 interview, what about the gods and God? And Billy said, well, in the sense that the religions name a god, a gods or a goddess, this is illusionary. This does not exist. There is neither a god nor are there gods. There are only ten gods. And ten gods are everything that the human being worships. A human being may be a tin god who is worshipped. A tin god may be illusionary, an imaginative figure. A god is called by the religions. But any object might be a tin god, a car, a house, a human being, anything that is worshipped. And this is idolatry. And that which is worshipped as God is also idolatry, because God is just an assumed imaginative figure. In reality, there is no God, but there is only creational universal consciousness, which is pure energy. It does not watch over the human being. It does not direct, because a human being exercises this himself. He himself watches and directs over himself, and he, the human being, decides himself what shall be done and what he shall do. Everything that happens and occurs, what the human being does, is his own decision. And from this, he hears and bears his own responsibility. There is no God anywhere in the whole universe in the form as is represented by the religions and the sects. There is only a God that has been invented imaginatively as an imaginary non-figure that is worshipped in a religious sectarian way by the human beings. He himself, the human being, is always responsible in any way for whatever happens, what is happening, what the human being does, he does and executes through his own decision. Consequently, he must bear the responsibility himself for everything that is happening. Well, Billy has many writings. He has various books. He has also documented his contacts with these extraterrestrial humans. One group of these humans, the world knows as the Pleiadians, even the Native Americans, I believe, referred to the Pleiadians. The Pleiades is about 400 light years from Earth. It's a star system that really doesn't have any life in it. It has blue stars, young blue stars. But these extraterrestrials are really not from our Pleiades. They're from a world called Era, which is some 80 light years beyond our Pleiades, in a different space and time configuration. They live in a different time plane than us, a different dimension. But we share common ancestors with them. You see, the Milky Way galaxy generally was colonized by a group of extraterrestrial humans who came into the Milky Way galaxy some 30 million years ago. And they landed in a spot called the Lyra Vega constellation. And they populated planets around there. Now, there were naturally developing Earth, or naturally developing human beings on various worlds in our galaxy. But the Lyrians came here and they settled in Lyra Vega. And they developed very advanced technologies. They had advanced technologies before they came here, came to our galaxy. And they made their own mistakes. They had their problem with war. Even though they were very advanced technologically, they hadn't yet finished their evolution in terms of spirituality. And one of the testaments to their warlike nature is called the Ring Nebula, which they call the Eye of God, or J-H-W-H Mata, in old Lyrian. And what that is the remnants of a star that had been destroyed by one of these Ishwishes, or kings of wisdom. Not a king of wisdom in terms of the spiritual teachings, but one of these very advanced kings of wisdom in the terms of technology. And some of these not-so-spiritual kings of wisdom came to the Earth the first time about 389,000 years ago, and they did their own genetic manipulations when they were here. Let me read what the Myers information says about it. That the future is not too far away, in which it is possible to cruise through genetic manipulation of plants and animals and to create entirely new forms of life. So it can be said that gene sodomy will inevitably come, even if it is contrary to the laws of creation. This is not to say that genetic engineering and gene manipulation is in itself contrary to the laws of creation, because this is not the case, quite the opposite, because both lie within the frame of creational principles, and so therefore are in line with the progress and evolution of human beings. Well, I started to talk about these Lyrians who were here 389,000 years ago. Have you ever wondered what the seraphim really were. Well, the Meyer material explains that the seraphim were not angels per se, but these were creatures which were genetically manipulated by these Lyrians who were here in the past. Let me continue. Gene sodomy is merely a sartong, a very bad get out of control of the human nature, through which is a result of gene intersections of different flora and fauna to form new species and new kinds of life, which are themselves capable of reproduction and thus in a position to give birth. Now these seraphim, as I was talking about, were animal-human hybrids and human-animal hybrids, the cherubim, which have been glorified as angels. Now, the Latin seraphim leads back to an old Lyrian term, word symbol, serhab, which was used for animal people created by gene sodomy. Seraphim is the plural of the word seraph. Now, one of the most bizarre images of the seraphim is, I think, in Revelation chapter 4, where it talks about the throne room of God and four living creatures that guard this throne room. And one of them had six wings and eyes all over. And this is one of these fiery six-winged angels attendant upon Jehovah. Remember what the Meyer material says about Yahovah, or Jehovah as he's called today, was a human extraterrestrial who demanded worship, who had very high technology. Isaiah saw the vision of these seraphs. Seraphs are said to be a member of the highest orders of angels, often represented with a child's head, wings above, below, and on each side. However, the Meyer material says the seraphim were animal humans. They were created via genetic manipulations in ancient times by the Lyrians. The seraphs were traditionally regarded as burning or flaming angels, though the word seems to have some etymological sense of flying, perhaps from confusion with the root of the Arabic sharafa, to be lofty. Some scholars identify it with the word found in the passages interpreted as fiery flying serpents. So, these creatures were said to have six wings and were in the shape of a snake. I bet they were pretty strange, pretty scary. So who is Nocodemia? We've talked about this before. Nocodemia was the first incarnated personality of the same spirit form that inhabits Edward Albert Meyer. Nocodemia had evolved through all the stages of life, primitive life, rational life, intelligent life, real life, life in creational wisdom, life in the half-spirit body, life in the purely spiritual realms. Nocodemia is the spirit form of Edward Albert Meyer. The extraterrestrials know him by also his previous incarnations. And the contacts of Edward Albert Meyer are in the line of Nocodemia, Sphath, Semyase, Ptah, Quetzal, perhaps even Asket. Now, the spirit form of Edward Albert Meyer has also incarnated in the earth as Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, and Muhammad. Now, these prophets had different names in our past. They weren't, for example, Enoch, at the time of his life, was known as Henoch. And there were three Henochs that were actually alive, one around 4500 B.C., one about 9000 B.C., and one about, well, I should say one about 4,500 years ago, one about 9,000 years ago, another one about 13,500 years ago. They taught this ancient universal teaching called the teaching of the spirit. Many times these prophets were also taught by extraterrestrial Ishwishes, which is a term, an ancient Lyrian term, for king of wisdom. Some examples from the Meyer information would include Ptah, or Ptah, Pelagon, Jehovah, Atlant, Eris, are all examples of Ishwishes. The term only applies to men, but there is an equivalent term for woman, Ish-Rish. There is also another level above that in terms of the spiritual teachings called Srut. And there's another one called Bansrut. The Bansrut is the highest form of all wisdom that can be achieved by humans. So again, the spirit form of Edward Albert Meyer is very ancient. He is incarnated as Enoch or Henoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, and Muhammad. So who was Emmanuel? Well, let me explain something before we get into who Emmanuel was. And it deals with language and how little we know about our own language. For example, the English language. The letter J only came into being right around the middle 1500s. Gian Giorgio Trevisano, an Italian scholar, invented the letter J. It really evolved kind of from the letter I. And it first became a part of the German language, and then the French, and then the English. And the original Gutenberg Bible had no letter J's in it. And the original King James Version had no letter J's in it. So all of these historical figures existed with different names. For example, if you look at the old paintings, the Renaissance paintings, often you'll see a scroll painted on the bottom or the top of the painting, and it has the acronym INRI. And that stands for Iesus Nazarenus Iodorium. And what that means is, what we translate it today is, Jesus Christ, King of the Jews. However, in Latin, he was known as Iesus rather than Jesus. So you can understand that there's been huge confusion in this area. So I often wondered why the Meyer material used the word Emmanuel. Well, the Meyer material says that what is handed down to us today in the story of Jesus is a fictionalized version of a man who really lived. His name was Emmanuel. And he taught about this universal consciousness. And he taught about the human spirit form. And he taught about reincarnation. And he explained that the universal consciousness is a neutral, positive entity. It's neither good nor evil. But the incredible splendor of nature is the visible expression of the love of creation. And he taught about personal responsibility and learning personal responsibility. And he taught that the meaning of life was evolving our consciousness through using personal responsibility and through controlling our thoughts. Well, over the centuries, his teachings became more and more distorted and more changed and more religious. And there was a hell added and a heaven added and a lake of fire and judgment added and all of these other things added. Now, if you look at the origin of the letter J, it, as I said originally, it originated from the swash letter I. And the history of the English language is much different than most people suspect. English developed over the course of more than 1,400 years, and it began in the 5th century. And the earliest form of English is called Old English. And Old English was spoken until about the 12th or 13th century. And there was no letter J in the Old English. That means no Julius Caesar. That means no Jehovah. That means no Jesus. The Old English alphabet consisted of the following letters: A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P, Q, R, S, T, V, W, X, Y, Z. There was no W, no J, no U in the Old English. No books written before 1600 AD had the letter J in them. And important political and religious figures whose names began with the letter J didn't exist. For example, Julius Caesar originally was not spelled with a J, nor did it have the sound of J. The same with the name of Jesus Christ, who some scholars believe that name began with I and was pronounced as if it began with a Y. And as I was saying earlier, the 1611 version of the King James Bible had no J's in it. No John. John was Yohanan. No Jehovah. Probably called Yehovah at that time. Does the letter J exist in Hebrew, Latin, or Greek? The answer to this question is no. The letter J never existed in any languages on earth until about 1500 or so. The letter J still does not exist in the Hebrew language either. So we mispronounce all the names of the Hebrew prophets, like Elijah. He was actually known as Eliah, and Enoch was known as Henoch. So Emmanuel is one of the old traditional names in the Illyrian language. Or even further back, it is quite clear that such an old name was not analogous to the names of any of our prophets here on earth. Again, I-N-R-I in the Latin means Iesus Nazarenus Rex Iodorium. And it's a Latin inscription which appears at the bottom of many of the old paintings. Now, I want to read a little something that one of Billy's contacts, Quetzal, has to say about the tomb cave of Emmanuel. The fact that the tomb, respectively the tomb cave, is sought for corresponds to the truth. But the correct site wasn't found because some time ago I had destroyed this by order of the High Council. So Quetzal had destroyed the tomb of Emmanuel by order of the High Council, so a Christian cult would not arise from this tomb. And you see, the player and I have a way of looking into the future. Again, Quetzal says, "But so it will be with the tomb came of Emmanuel. It will continue to be sought for. And already a place has been localized, which should serve as Emmanuel's tomb site. But inexcusable mistakes and unreal wishful thinking play a very important role in this. But through this, the researchers and would-be researchers make sense of unrealistic facts or devoid of any truth, because for quite some time nothing more is noticeable or traceable on the slope's terrain, where the burial place caved in as a result of the destruction of the tomb and the slope's collapse. Quetzal continues, nevertheless, false and misleading research will continue to operate, namely into the third millennium, where for a longer time it will be erroneously maintained that the tomb site of Emmanuel was actually found. Very interesting information about Emmanuel. You know, Billy allegedly went back in time with an extraterrestrial woman named Asket. And Billy was actually able to meet Emmanuel face to face. Now, the same spirit form residing in two different people. And they had conversation. And these conversations are recorded in the contact notes. Very strange. Amazing, actually. One spirit form and two different people. Let me continue here what Billy has to say. I am surprised, and since we are already at it, when I was allowed to travel with Asket back into Emmanuel's time and also actually met him. Again, Billy's meeting one of his formerly incarnated personalities, whereby I could speak with him using the language converter. There he told me his life story, which was very different from what is maintained in the New Testament. By the way, there is an age of recognitions after enough reincarnations. When we get to the Ishwish level, we will recognize our previous lives. Again, actually he was a revolutionary, speaking of Emmanuel. He said so himself, but not in the sense of a religious form, but rather in relation to the true teaching of the Spirit. As this is also clear from the Talmud of Emmanuel. By the way, there is a new, updated, improved translation of the Talmud of Emmanuel that should be responsible or available to responsible people soon. And you can thank my friend Nate for that. He had played a big role in that. He said, okay, let's continue with Emmanuel. He said that he was very unpopular with his superiors, the rulers, as well as the scribes, etc., and that his life was in danger as a result of his revolutionary teaching, for he enlightened the people and advocated for their freedom in every respect. He did this in such a way because, on the one hand, this was his mission that he had to fulfill since ages ago, across different personalities and across different reincarnations of his spirit form. On the other hand, because this was also the desire of his parents. Actually, this is very interesting. Mary and Joseph did not hold to the old traditional religious teachings. Very interesting. Joseph and Mary, as well as Emmanuel and his brothers and sisters, hadn't been simple folk from the common people. But according to Emmanuel, they enjoyed a degree of prosperity, which was allowed in that the father Joseph and the mother Mary, as well as all the children, could read and write. Thus, Joseph was an independent craftsman with his own business. And just as independent were also Emmanuel's brothers, who pursued their own crafts. And as Emmanuel said, he too was very independent and autonomous. He was an expert of reading and writing and had earned his living through the spreading of the spiritual teachings, where he received donations. So this is a discussion between Billy and Quetzal. And Billy talks about Emmanuel's journey back to Kashmir in India, and where he died at about 115 years of age. However, it is repeatedly asserted this does not correspond to the truth, and that Hazmat Mizra Ghulam Ahmad of Qadi, the founder of the Islamic sect Ahmadiyya, had told fibs with the story that he discovered Emmanuel's grave in Srinagar, India. As Fath has already explained to me, this corresponds at least to a form of reality, because the founder of the sect wasn't actually the discoverer of the tomb, rather a man named Kanishika Rashkadrai found the tomb in the year AD 746. All this is vehemently denied, however, by all sorts of scientists and would-be scientists. There's a lot to be learned about the story of Emmanuel, and I will continue to learn. I would not claim to be an expert in that area. It's a very controversial part of the Meyer material. I wanted to pick back up with what the Meyer information had to say about Adolf Hitler, and that actually his destiny was to be a great leader, and that he would have been a tremendously positive person, and he would have brought together and united Earth humanity. However, he succumbed to an attack by the Giza intelligences through the leaders of the Thule Society. And he fell prey to their manipulations. See, the Giza intelligences had a kind of impulses that would affect our thinking and have affected our thinking in many ways. And Adolf fell into kind of a delusion where he was wanting grandeur. And he had, well, you remember him going into Russia, who were actually his allies. And he had real no reason to attack them other than maybe to get some oil, but he could have bought oil from the Russians. Can you imagine if Germany and Russia would have stayed allies in World War II? We'd all be speaking German right now, most likely. There was a man who worked with the Giza intelligences called Steinschneider. That was his real name. At the time, he wasn't called Steinschneider. He was called Erich John Hanussen. But his real name was Hermann Steinschneider, and he was one of the people in the Thule Society. And through this Thule Society, back in 1933... Hitler got into this delusion of grandeur. Let me read here. At the same time, Steinschneider became even more powerful in the course of time with respect to his domination over Adolf Hitler. Steinschneider was kind of dominating Adolf. If he'd have been left alone, he would have been a very positive force in the world. He was very intelligent. Let's continue. And the consequence of this was that they allowed Steinschneider, alias Hanussen, to be murdered in 1933. So Steinschneider was killed, but already the damage had been done. But this didn't change anything in Hitler's attitude, of course. Therefore, he became more and more of a monster, as you would say. So the world would have been a very different place if it were not for the Giza intelligences, the Thule Society, and this individual named Steinschneider. And Adolf Hitler was actually influenced in a positive way through telepathic impulses by the Pleiaren when Adolf was very young. And indeed, he would have been a very positive, helpful person. But about the time that he went off to study art in Vienna, I think it was, that he started to fall towards the negative and evil. And shortly thereafter, he became prey to the Giza intelligences and the Thule Society. So, in any case, many fascinating details from history are contained in the Meyer contacts. You know, I think Billy has had over 600 of these contacts, and he has documented them quite well in these contact notes. One of the interesting things in Contact 260, which I've been reading to you, is it talks about, oh, by the way, if you want to read these for yourself, they're at a website called www.futureofmankind.co.uk. If you Google Billy Meyer Wiki, you'll find it. One of the things discussed in Contact 260 are the force protective shields of the Pleiaren. And these, you know, you see in the science fiction movies where the ships have these shields and the shields are hit with beam weapons and the shields get weaker and weaker and they slowly go away after they've been hit enough times. Well, 1,000 or so years ago, the Pleiaren had shields like that. However, their current shields actually absorb the energy of whatever is striking them, and so it actually makes the shields even stronger. Let me read a little bit here. And Ptah is speaking here. It all depends on what energy sources are used for a protective shield and what measures they are used and how they can be brought to application. As you know very well, energies are not simply energies. But this doesn't actually have to be explained in detail, therefore. It is only said that in general, different technologies for utilization of protective shields exhibit different forms of energy, from which energy shields can be generated. Protective shields themselves can be very different. So they might protect a spaceship or their aircraft, etc. With this, it should be explained that a spaceship, another aircraft, a human, a robot, an android, or something else, can just be protected by a single, full-scale protective shield, or by one that consists of several segments. And they go on to explain how these shields can exist as segments. And Ptah goes on, talk continues to discuss here. He says, however, our energy shields don't work in the way as portrayed in your science fiction films, namely that the protective shields are weakened when foreign energies from beam weapons or cosmic energy fields, shocks of energy, impact the shields. But what means these become weakened in a capacity, etc., etc.? Okay, I was wrong about something here. I'll continue. The form of the protective shield development only represents an initial one. We already left this behind us thousands of years ago. Now, thousands, already more than 40,000 years ago, our technology in this regard experienced such a high development that protective shields could be perfected and put into use. The Pleiaren have had peace for 50,000 years. Can you imagine what kind of technologies we would have if we could have peace for only 100 years, more or less 50,000? Again, let me continue. The impacts of foreign energies of every kind, including, of course, protective shield-conforming energies, the protective shields are neither weakened or destroyed. Rather, they convert the impacting energy immediately and without loss of time into their own energy and are thus strengthened. So just a little fascinating tidbit about their shields. There's another interesting article up on the Billy Meyer Wiki. It's entitled Those Who Lie About Contacts. And it talks about Muhammad, which is a new area of my study in the Meyer material as well. Muhammad is, so according to Meyer information, one of the incarnated, the material incarnations of Edward Albert Meyer, of the spirit form of Edward Albert Meyer. And he was said to teach intentional half-truths. In some cases, the spread of the Muslim Islamic religion is designed to thwart the spread of Christianity. Both of these religions, according to Meyer information anyway, can be very, very destructive. And this incarnation of the Nokedamian spirit form was designed to stop the spread of Christianity. So this is the counterforce to Christianity, the teachings of Islam. And it's very interesting that Muhammad, early in his, when he was in Mecca, he taught very peaceful, loving kind of teachings. According to conventional wisdom, when he moved to Medina, he became kind of a warlord, he became rich, and then he started teaching things like kill the unbelievers wherever you can find them. You know, we don't even know how much of what's been handed down is actually what he taught. So some of the stuff sounds incredibly violent. Some of there's passages in certain Muslim teachings that talk about it being okay to have sex with / rape the female captives. Did Muhammad actually teach that? Well, according to some of what's been handed down in the Hadith and the Quran, yes, he did. How much of that was actually really taught, I do not know. But let me continue to read here a little bit of what it says about Emmanuel and Muhammad. It is only of Prophet Muhammad's life prior to his existence as a prophet that more information is known, while nothing or very little is known of the other prophets of old. This applies to Emmanuel as well, who only began to fulfill his mission as a prophet at the age of approximately 29 years, while very little is known about his earlier years. It is completely unknown that he was in India, where he learned a great deal and gained much experience. It is totally unknown that he also, in an absolutely positive sense of the word, was kind of an arch. He was a rogue. And he eclipsed Muhammad in this respect. So, Muhammad's strategy was successful even though Christianity spread further after his end. It did thwart Christianity from spreading all over the world. Now I guess there's a billion Muslims. So very, very interesting, mind-bending information from the Meyer material. I wanted to also cover a little bit from what I consider to be a very important writing of the Meyer material. And it talks, and this is called also on the Future of Mankind site, it's called Meditation from Clear Sight. The true wealth of the meditative basis to the positive consciousness bearing rests in the true insight and in the true knowledge, learning, and experience, that the omnipotence of one's own thoughts and feelings steers all functions and processes of life as a whole. Opposed to this is the blind belief in an all-directing God and in amulets that fend off calamity, magical talismans, ritualistic acts, and hallowed places of worship, holy rituals and relics, consecrated shrines, hallowed in holy water, holy breads and wines, etc. Knowledge is, in its essence, wisdom and positive neutral power. In comparison with belief is a lack of understanding and a phenomena of intellectual feeling related as well as psyche consciousness related misdirection mechanisms without knowing regarding the creational spiritual and creational natural laws and directives. From this, it is clearly and definitely follows that recognition, knowledge, learning, experience, and wisdom are alone the true factors that exhibit real values and are evolutively effective and build a positive basis to the positive consciousness bearing. While in contrast to this, belief is a path to destruction, and devolution, and it leads to insanity and confusion as well as to perturbed consciousness bearing. Oh my goodness. What a powerful statement. Let me read this again. From this, it clearly and definitely follows that recognition, knowledge, learning, experience, and wisdom are alone the true factors that exhibit real values and are evolutively effective and build a positive basis to the positive consciousness bearing. While in contrast to this, belief is a path to destruction and de-evolution and leads to insanity and confusion as well as to perturbed consciousness bearing. I was just trying to think what the Meyer information in the Might of Thoughts has to say about belief, and that it is very hypnotic, and that it tends to somehow interfere with our free will. This is what's coming to my memory at the time. Let me just read a few of these 77 steps of meditation. 1. To live in today's world, I must be strong and develop tenacity with regard to my consciousness and my intellect. 2. The more tranquil and tenacious I become, the more I cope with life's difficulties. 3. The creational natural power is within myself, and I use this, putting it into effect in my thinking and acting. I change myself positively within my consciousness bearing and utilize my creational natural power within myself for this. I am strong within myself and change my mental self-image positively. Everything is achievable for me, and I master whatever I wish to accomplish. I always raise my view, recognize all possibilities, and am a positive thinker. I cope with all difficulties with courage and a victor's readiness. I will always be as good and positive as my thoughts and feelings and actions actually are. Within me exists neither anxiety nor fear. My thoughts and feelings strengthen the trust in myself. I always abide with my knowledge, and my thoughts and feelings are positive, and they generate what is positive. I always find my own strength and can depend on it. I myself always decide and act on my own responsibility and lead and define my life myself. It is joy to me to know and value myself. Because I cultivate myself, I can depend on myself. My nature is good, and I am a true human. There is no discontent in me, because everything moves actively and in contentment. Myself is developed, and I live good with this together in harmony. Because I respect creation, I respect and value myself. In every respect, I steer my life myself, and I also like my own results that I create. In the consciousness, the psyche, as well as my own thoughts and feelings, I am great and friendly and adverse to every humility. My inclination is to live according to the creational natural laws. Well, folks, I hope you've enjoyed the show this evening. We're getting ready to head into a new year. Please take some time to listen and study the Billy Meyer material. Have a good evening.